Today has been called the bloodiest day in modern Ukrainian history.
You see, there are a lot of dead bodies here already, at least five maybe, but I'm not sure, you know, I'm busy to help other people. Bullets, actually, bullets through the body, and where the one who are lucky through limbs, who are not lungs and heart, and they are, unfortunately, we cannot help in these conditions here to these people, unfortunately.
That comes from a BBC reporter who was talking to a woman in Kiev, Ukraine. Yesterday's truce between President Viktor Yanukovych and protesters has crumbled. There have been reports that protesters armed with axes, knives, and shields have driven riot police out of Independence Square in Kiev. The anti-government protests have led to dozens of deaths and hundreds of injuries. The death toll is expected to rise. To get a better perspective on what's going on in Ukraine, I talked this morning to Scott Radnitz. He directs the Ellison Center for Russian, Eastern European, and Central Asian Studies at the University of Washington.
In the last 2 days, things have taken a severe turn for the worst, starting with failure of parliament to pass a new set of constitutional changes that would have possibly led to a long-term solution. The failure of parliament to take that action then led some protesters to challenge riot police, which led to a backlash as police tried to clear the square. And since then, the violence has escalated constantly for the last 2 days.
What has made this political unrest in Ukraine so volatile?
Well, Ukraine is unique in some ways, post-Soviet world. If you look at a map of Europe, Ukraine now lies on the border between the European Union and other post-Soviet countries. So in some ways, it's this cliche of now the dividing line between East and West. In addition to that, the country itself is split about 50-50 in terms of people's preferences, whether they orient themselves toward Russia or toward Europe. And Ukraine is very large and very important. It has 46 million people. It's also large geographically. So the stakes are pretty high for both people in Ukraine and for Russia and the West.
It sounds as though the Ukraine is being pushed by Russia to align itself more closely. There are those in Europe who would like to pull Ukraine into that circle. President Obama has criticized Russia's support for the crackdown. What's the international community doing and even able to do to help ease the conflict?
There really isn't that much that the West is able to do. The Obama administration has made some statements condemning violence from the government side. European Union diplomats have been going back and forth to Kiev to try to bring the sides together. But ultimately, the West doesn't have that much leverage. But Russia has a lot more leverage over the government than the West does over either side. Russia has now offered a $15 billion loan in Ukraine on the assumption that Ukraine is going to orient themselves toward Russia, or at least not sign any deals with the West. So this $15 billion is hard to ignore, and this gives Russia a lot more leverage over the government than the West has. Most of what's happening is this being decided in Ukraine. Russia's not pulling the puppet strings here. The government wants to stay in power, and I think the government itself is going to determine what ultimately happens in the country.
The Ukrainian government does not appear to be able to crush this uprising with sheer brute force. In fact, there are many policemen who are among the casualties in the recent conflict. Is the civilian population well enough armed to prevent that? Why is there a standoff in that way?
Up to this point, the protesters have not been nearly as well armed as the government. And in general, they can't be. The government has a lot more force. That's just the nature of things. But up until now, the government has not used the full amount of force at its disposal. I think by selectively using violence against protesters, by putting various kinds of pressure on the demonstrators, I think they were hoping that people would go away, that people would eventually get tired and go home. The government doesn't want to be responsible for a massacre. This would look bad for them internationally. Even though Yanukovych is authoritarian, he still cares about his international reputation. So up until this point, I think they were trying to go with a strategy of less violence. That appears not to have worked, though, and this escalation might end up being more dangerous than if they had decided to use force much earlier.
Scott, do you think this will stay in the Ukraine? We can remember from the Arab Spring that one uprising seemed to lead to another and another. What do you think is going to happen in this part of the world?
Well, it's too early to say even what's going to happen in Ukraine itself. Again, things are moving very fast on the ground, and the last 24 hours have been very alarming. But there's still pressures on both sides to try to pull things back from the brink. Most of the opposition protesters are peaceful. They want to have some kind of resolution. And I think Yanukovych also doesn't want to see the country split in two. On the other hand, there are radicals in the opposition, a small number of extremists who have gone out and provoked more clashes, so there's a danger that it could escalate further. As to whether this could spread outside Ukraine, you know, you could game out a bunch of scenarios. If things got really bad in Ukraine, potentially, who knows, it could spread in various ways. But for now, I think it's important to focus on what's going on the ground and to try to figure out, you know, what the government can do in order to retain its power and yet give enough concessions to the opposition that they can find a deal that they can accept.
Who are these radicals who seem to be instigating some of the violence in Ukraine?
In January, a group emerged among the protesters that called itself the Right Sector, and these are right-wing ultra-nationalists. And from the beginning, these were the people who were going out and challenging the riot police, throwing Molotov cocktails at them, and seemingly trying to provoke violence. It's not clear what they actually stand for. They're not pro-EU. They're also against the current government. Mostly, they've been there to stir up trouble. The opposition's problem is that it's not united, and that the leaders of the opposition, who are moderates, who are heads of political parties, are not able to control everybody who's in the square, and that's what sends things out of control.
Scott Radness is with me. He studies Eastern European issues at the University of Washington. This, of course, is not the first uprising in the region. About a decade ago, there were the so-called color revolutions. We saw several former Soviet Union states stand up against the government. Why have they not gone through the same violent upheaval we're seeing in Ukraine?
So this is not the first case of a major protest against the government in the region. As you mentioned, there were the so-called color revolutions. That's Georgia 2003, Ukraine 2004, Kyrgyzstan 2005. Kyrgyzstan again in 2010. So there have been these tensions in countries that are run by corrupt governments where their foreign policy is kind of indeterminate. But Ukraine, as I mentioned, is a special case because it's split about 50-50 down the middle, which is not the case in other post-Soviet countries, and it's much more important to the international community. So I think everything is really culminating now in these events. And what happens in Ukraine is really going to be very important for the future of Eastern Europe.
How have these other countries that have had uprisings, Kyrgyzstan, Yugoslavia, stabilized since their uprisings?
Georgia had a democratic election in 2012 after the revolutionary government. It appears to be on a kind of stable path. Moldova just signed the association agreement with the European Union, so they're a democracy. It looks like they're progressing toward a more European future. Other countries, though, are kind of stuck in a Soviet model. Belarus really hasn't reformed much in the last 20 years. Central Asia is still authoritarian. So there's a wide range of development trajectories in the post-Soviet countries, and Ukraine is, again, still kind of caught in the middle and really hasn't picked the direction yet.
Scott Radnitz is an associate professor and director of the Ellison Center for Russian, East European, and Central Asian Studies at the University of Washington. The Reuters News Service reports a glimmer of hope. The Ukrainian opposition leader has said that he hopes for a roadmap to peace tonight. Meanwhile, pressure continues to build from the outside. The European Union is imposing sanctions on Ukrainian government officials, barring them from getting visas to leave Ukraine. With Marcy Silman, I'm Ross Reynolds. This is The Record.